to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. A quick word here for one of our great sponsors, Bud Light. Bud Light reminds you to get over to HoustonDynamo.com. It's where you can get season tickets to the Houston Dynamo, the Houston Dash. And Bud Light reminds you also to get down to BBVA Compass Stadium because there's so many events coming here in Houston in the future. We've got CONCACAF Women's Olympic qualifying coming up here in February. We've got probably not down at BBVA, but over at Energy. But we have more great soccer with the Copa Centenario coming to Houston, three games there as well. And then, of course, next year, the NCAA Men's College Cup here in 2016. So Bud Light reminds you, get down to BBVA Compass Stadium, be with like-minded individuals, and take in the game of soccer. Now, with that, there is incredible excitement in Columbus, Ohio, the Columbus Crew getting to the MLS Cup Final. The minute I saw that, I thought, well, who better to talk to than play-by-play man on television for the Columbus Crew? He's Dwight Burgess. He joins us now. Dwight, thank you very much for coming on the show. Let's just start with what the energy and excitement is like in the city of Columbus.
Well, I tell you what, first of all, it's great to be with you again, Glenn. And we got back in, flew a charter, and got back in right around 2:30 in the morning, and there was a crowd at the airport there waiting to greet the team, so many that a bunch were turned away by security because the airport was otherwise closed. And that's just a send-off. The game is officially sold out. Tickets are going for $400, $500, $600 on StubHub and other places like that. There were multiple local media outlets at the airport when we arrived last night, and certainly, this is an Ohio State town. It always has been, and it always will be. But to get that type of immediate reception following the game is pretty significant. And they're really kind of the talk of the town right now. And I think in that respect, it's great that the football team at Ohio State didn't make the Big Ten championship game this Saturday because, really, the black and gold are number one on the list.
Boy, it is exciting. The Columbus Crew obviously will take on the Portland Timbers in the MLS Cup Final at Moffrey Stadium. I want to take you into a couple things here. I mean, this has been a remarkable turnaround for this organization. How much of this comes down to having local ownership?
I think that there is a very important part, but far more on the business side. You know, the soccer specific. Well, let me back up a step. When Anthony Precourt took over ownership of the team, he made a very significant change in operations. Prior to that time, everything had run through the president and general manager of the team. He separated the business side and the soccer side. He gave all of the soccer side to Greg Berhalter. He gave all of the business side to Andy Lochnane. Andy then reconstituted his staff with predominantly local people who had experience in the market. And I think it's shown in the business plan, and it's clearly shown with the attention to Greg Berhalter on the soccer side that it's worked very well. So I think that Anthony Precourt made a huge decision that has really played out well.
So the structure of the club obviously changed in a big way. On the business side, were any of those locals that were hired or were originally with the Crew, did any of them have a real affinity for the sport of soccer?
You know, it's a great question, and there's a real mix. There are some who have college playing backgrounds, young lady that we do a lot of internet stuff with now, you know, online web presence. She played at Ohio University, so she's come in. One of the guys in the communications department's a former player. So there is definitely a collection of people who have come in that have specific soccer backgrounds. And then really some of the management level people underneath Andy are people that have come in from other organizations that are either sports oriented or are local or both. So, yeah, I think he's been very savvy in those moves.
So there are a lot of locals involved that truly understand what the soccer community is about from top to bottom, I guess, youth all the way on up. Let's talk about Greg Berhalter, because what he has done is pretty remarkable here. He obviously has brought the vision on the soccer side and has been allowed to do it.
He has been. He's been given the keys to the kingdom, and he has taken them with the utmost respect. You and I talked a little bit about this on a prior program in the past, but Greg is incredibly methodical. He is very planned out. He manages every single detail, and he has a plan, and he is really good, Glenn, about staying focused on that plan. It doesn't matter if they gave up 5 goals in a loss midseason at Orlando, or if they had just, you know, thumped Toronto on Toronto's home field. His approach after the game was always the same, almost Bill Belichick-like, in that we're on to the next game. We're on to the next game. Never gets high, never gets low, very, very steady, believes in these players, and ultimately has tried to create a player-centric environment that the guys have responded to.
You know what really resonated with me? I remember a couple of years ago after the World Cup when Giancarlo Gonzalez had a wonderful World Cup for Costa Rica. And Greg Berhalter, I just happened to be out there doing a game on the day Greg Berhalter had the press conference before the game to talk about the sale of Gonzalez to Palermo. And I just thought he was brilliant in the way he positioned this as such a win-win for the Columbus Crew, whereas I think around the league other clubs would have, you know, it would have been a bit of a state of panic here. And now I know there wasn't really a lot of other option than doing that, but he really, the way he verbalized it, the way he approached that press conference with the sale of Gonzalez, just, you know, it kind of not only was a positive in the short term, but he kind of was looking out into the future here, saying that this was good business and a good part of our club.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter what your specific walk of life may be, but in his case, he's a soccer coach. And in order to get players to buy in, as you well know from your own experience, Glenn, you have to paint a picture that makes sense to them. Most people don't know that in the last round of call-ups, Columbus Crew SC had 9 players called up to various international teams. Harrison Offal, captain, when he went back home. This is a very interesting roster of guys that he's brought in that he has made understand that they come first, and if during their time at Columbus Crew SC they play at a level that allows them to have another opportunity that's in their own best interest, Greg will always support that. Greg has been very supportive of Will Trapp, you know, leaving for a period of time with the under-23s. He's been a very vocal promoter of Will to get in more time with the national team. So, I mean, that's just Greg lives and breathes what he says.
He's Dwight Burgess, TV play-by-play man, long time for the Columbus Crew, also has done it at a number of different levels from a coaching perspective as well, the youth game, the college game. He's been around it. Dwight, let me take you a little bit forward here, and let's get into Kai Kamara here. And obviously, you know, it's funny, I was having a conversation with Eddie Robinson, game one of the year, which was in Houston, and the Crew obviously was on the short end, I think, of a 1-0 game or a 2-1 game. It was a while back, and I remember looking at Eddie Robinson and go, oh, man, hands down, 10 to 15 goals for Kai Kamara. Well, he blew that number out of the water with over 20. Talk about what he's meant to not only the Crew on the field, but this relationship he has with the fans, because he's a marketing dream as well.
He is. You know, people don't realize, or a lot of folks I don't think realize, that Kai Kamara actually began his MLS career in Columbus. And at that time came in as a very raw talent whose athleticism or his athletic tools had made him a very productive player in the college game, in the youth game, but he was very immature from a professional standpoint. Eventually moved on, as you know, bounced around the league a couple of times, but grew, learned, listened most importantly, and cultivated that into an opportunity in Europe. When he came back late last year and was signed, though he wasn't able to play, it was really interesting to listen to him talking because he was saying all the right things. So then the question was going to be, will he follow up with those when he steps on the field? And what people who don't get to see Kyle on a regular basis don't understand is his work ethic. He is not only the leading scorer, but he is the most likely player to win a defensive header off of a set piece, a corner kick, something like that. He is always back in the box defensively in those situations working. He is just as happy to make the run away from the ball to create opportunities for guys like Merrim and Finley. He scores with his feet. He scores with his head. So his combination of work rate, his attitude, and ultimately his maturity. He's grown up. He will tell you that. And he's not only engaged in this team, he's engaged in the community. He has his own nonprofit, developing school opportunities back home. So this is a young man who has taken the lessons presented to him, and he's made the most of it.
He's Dwight Burgess joining us here tonight. We'll take a break.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
He's Dwight Burgess joining us here tonight. He knows the crew up and down. All right, when people say it's a counterattacking style that the Columbus Crew has or labels them a counterattacking team, is that fair?
I think it is to a certain degree. What they want to do is play out of the back and attack very quickly. They transform it. On paper, they start in a 4-2-3-1. I just say it's a version of a 4-5-1. When they get into the attack, it's really much more of a 3-4-3. So they like to get forward quickly. They don't mind playing out of the back. One of the reasons that Greg Berhalter brought Steve Clark in to play in goal is because of his technical proficiency with his feet. Now, they have exposed themselves at times when they're trying to play out of the back, when maybe it's better just to whack the thing and start anew. But they want to play out of the back. They want to play very quickly, change the point of attack, allow Federico Higuain to find the spaces to play to the speedy guys like Kamara and Finley and Merrim. But if they are unsuccessful, the minute they win the ball, they will look to counterattack. And I think what they learned in the regular season when they beat New York was that there are times when this team can be direct and can be very successful. So rather than trying to play through that forward press, if you will, of the Red Bulls, they began to go Highway 1 over it, and in doing so, forced New York to turn and chase, forced Red Bull to play a full field, which New York really didn't want to do. So I think it's a combination of taking what's available to them. They'll play out of the back, but if they can get a turnover in transition, they will counterattack at pace.
Did the Crew learn something as well about their way of containing this game in some ways? I mean, obviously it got a little bit crazy at the end, but,
yeah.
I mean, to be fair, the way they defended this New York team, which was the highest scoring team in Major League Soccer during the regular season, this was a real success from a defensive standpoint.
In the playoffs, four games plus the 30 minutes of overtime with Montreal, they shut out Drogba, Piatti, and Wright Phillips. I mean, I think that says it all for a team that at the end of the regular season was among the top couple in goals scored, but was also among the top couple in goals allowed. Now, the numbers began to improve defensively late in the season, and I think they've gained confidence in the addition of Gaston Sauro late in the season. And boy, you've been around every bit as long as I have. To bring in a central defender and put him in the final month to 6 weeks of the regular season and say have at it is really a tricky thing to do. But Gaston has come in. Tyson Wall has adapted beautifully. Tyson was called to play that first game against New York when they pitched the shutout. Mm-hmm. So it's all of those things coming together, but ultimately I think they really are confident now with their play defensively as a group.
You know, Dwight, the four teams that ended up in the conference finals, the one thing that I look at is, man, Major League Soccer has become incredibly athletic. You have to have players and your overall team speed. It can't be one or two players. You got to have speed in a lot of areas, and it just really kind of stuck out to me.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more, and look no farther than Columbus Crew SC for that. Not the most technically proficient team under pressure in the league, that's for sure, but Harrison Offal at right back, Waylon Francis at left back. The last couple of seasons, Waylon Francis, the Costa Rican, has led defenders in MLS in assists. These two guys can fly. Merrim is certainly not a speedster the way Finley is, but Justin is much faster than I think people realize. So you've got four wide players who are effectively sprinters on the field,
yes.
And then Kai Kamara in front of them, and it's been really a perfect setup for Federico Higuain, who works so hard himself from side to side. In fact, Jesse Marsh was talking after game one of this series about how badly Higuain had hurt them, even though he wasn't necessarily immediately involved in scoring goals, but rather he kept popping up here and then popping up over there, and he was working so hard away from the ball around the field that he completely took Dax McCarty out of the match. And as you know, as Dax goes, largely so goes Red Bull.
You know, Justin Merrim, a couple of years ago, people were going, well, this guy thinks he's better than he really is, you know? I mean, and I'm not saying that in a negative way, but sometimes you come out of college and you come out of places where, you know, you're the big fish in the small pond. What has happened here? This guy has transformed beautifully in the last couple of years.
I think it's very similar for both Ethan and Justin. I think these are guys that had talent, and I think to his credit, Robert Varzia had spotted that talent. But I think that Robert's more kind of traditional Eastern European way of handling things, particularly at the professional level where the young guys are just seen and not heard, and they're supposed to follow the veterans. And I don't think for some of those guys that that was probably the optimum way for them to succeed. So they had raw skill and raw talent, and I think when Greg came in, sat down and said, relax, I'm going to give you a chance in this system, which I think is well suited for you. And then he put them on the field, and for a while, whether they played well or whether they played poorly, he kept putting out there to the point where they both gained confidence. And then, of course, for Justin, kind of fell out of the sky. The next thing you know, he's playing for Iraq. He's now a regular in there. He's been taking penalties for that team. So having that kind of success for a national team on a global scale, and certainly they're, you know, at a second-tier competitiveness, but nonetheless, traveling to represent that nation and playing an international competition has, I think, been the final piece of the puzzle for Justin.
It seems very maturing to me, but you, as someone with as extensive a youth background and coaching background that you have, there's still a lot of players in Major League Soccer that have to be coached, that have to be worked with, that can't come into training sessions and not get attention and be expected to thrive on their own sometimes. I mean, I think managers still have to teach, don't they?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's part of the reason why we've seen really mixed results when international coaches have come in. You mentioned earlier these four teams. Look at who coaches the final four teams in MLS this year. Former players, experienced coaches, and of course, Caleb Porter was known first and foremost at Akron for his ability to recruit. Because, you know, Will Trapp once told me that when he went on his visit to Akron, he left thinking that he was now Caleb Porter's best friend in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that ability to connect, that you, and you have that playing background and you understand the American mentality and what the league is about, I think is huge. And then you have the pedigree to step out on the field and actually demonstrate at times. You know, these guys are still connected, whether it's Oscar Perea, or, you know, whether it's a Jay Heaps or Jesse Marsh. You know, these are guys who can still step on the field and have credibility from their own experience, and they understand the younger players' mentality and what this generation wants. And this generation needs to be engaged. They will ask you why, and they're not questioning. They just want to understand the why behind do this, do that. They're not the infantrymen that you can just point in a direction and have them go. They want to be engaged in that process. And I think that some of these former players who are now becoming head coaches understand that.
Yeah, it's exciting to see the new sort of breed of coach coming in. And these are all guys that can still get in there and demonstrate as well.
Yep.
I don't think there's any question. Before I let you go, Dwight.
All right. Sure.
Obviously, we talked about the pace of the Columbus Crew, but you're coming up against a team in the Portland Timbers that's got a boatload of pace as well. We can talk Alvis Powell. We can talk Darlington Nagbe. We can talk a number of players, Rodney Wallace. They have a tremendous amount of pace as well. So how do you see this matching up here this weekend?
I think it's going to be a track meet. I think you're 100% right. They played at Moffray Stadium during the regular season, and it was one of the few losses at home that Columbus had. Now, this was during a time when I think they were still really subject to a couple of bad mistakes defensively per game, and Portland, with their attacking talent, took advantage. but it had a lot of end-to-end, a lot of speed. I think everybody's been waiting all season long. When is the Portland offense going to finally engage? Wasn't for a lack of opportunities. In fact, they were one of the better teams in the league at creating chances. They just weren't consistently finishing. Well, they found that rhythm finally. They've carried it forward. And you know what? I think this could be one of those 4-3 games. I think it's going to be up and down. I think there's going to be a lot of offensive opportunities. And while obviously I have a personal rooting interest, at the end of the day, I think it would be great for the spectators to see a high-energy attacking game that has several goals in it.
I think it's going to be exciting. And the move of Caleb Porter to move Darlington Nagbe into a higher position there has brought the best out of Fernando Adi as well. I mean, his last 5 weeks, he's looked a much better player in Major League Soccer. Well, look, Dwight, this is going to be a beauty. I love the final, Portland-Columbus. I know people are, oh, there's no New York, no L.A. Who cares? This is a great final.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Just my second one in 20 years, so I'm going to enjoy every bit of the week. And it's an exciting time here in Columbus.
Well, it's a great time for you as well. You're a Columbus treasure. Thank you very much for coming on the program.
Absolutely, Glenn. All the best.
All right. He's Dwight Burgess, play-by-play man on TV, long time in the Columbus community in a variety of capacities. The crew will take on the Portland Timbers this weekend for the MLS Cup Championship. I love it. We'll take a break.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. We're going to wrap it up in style here tonight, soccer fans. Robbie Earle, NBC analyst. You can see him literally week in and week out in the studio analyzing the Premier League. Of course, he played in the Premier League, also represented Jamaica, and at a time was a color analyst for the Portland Timbers in Major League Soccer. Here is part one with Robbie Earle. Robbie, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the program.
Pleasure, Glenn. Pleasure, mate.
Well, let's whip through a couple of topics here in the Premier League right now. Has the league, in your mind, because you follow it so closely, you've been doing this a number of years now, you played in this league, has it become more interesting to you that specific things have happened? Let's say, there's maybe not the dominance there once was by specific clubs. You've got Everton standing up to big money, Chelsea, and not trading one of their star players, and John Stones, who's a future prospect. Are all these things, you know, Bournemouth coming into the league, are all these things kind of making the Premier League even more interesting?
I think it is, Glenn. I think every weekend we're getting big storylines, big dramas, you know, headlines. And one of the things that I think has happened over the last maybe 2 or 3 years is that the league, let's take out the top 4 or 5 teams, will always be strong, will always spend money. But I think the league everywhere else, it has picked up in terms of its quality. So you no longer got games where the top teams are going to go somewhere middle or bottom and guarantee 3 points. We've got teams like West Ham now spent well, have got a good team. Everton look exciting this time around. Swansea, though they've had a little bit of a bad run, started well. Stoke City, Crystal Palace. There's a number of teams now who've invested because of the money that's involved in the Premier League now, because of the TV deals that are putting so much finance back into football clubs. I think they're getting stronger. I think they're getting better. And I think teams coming up are doing everything they can to make sure they stay in there because the riches is so big now being in the Premier League.
Robbie, to you, you know, big money, stars. I mean, this is entertainment. This is showtime. Yes. This is all those things.
Yeah,
but then, you know, when we go back to before the forming of the Premier League, which I believe was 1992, you know, there is this tremendous provincial history with these clubs. I mean, remarkable, which I'm sure that people that have adopted this only in the Premier League era maybe aren't even that connected to, and maybe it doesn't even matter. But how much is the provincial side of it, that history? Do you still sense that in stadiums everywhere now?
I do, and I think it's growing more and more, and I know we'll talk a little bit about MLS later on, and that's probably something that you know, the American clubs can look at in England in the Premier League and look at how they can grow their clubs and the affinities to communities, because it's such a big thing now. It's such a global attraction, a football club. It's historically been in places for hundreds of years, supported by generations of families. And I think, you know, the appeal for the league is getting stronger we're seeing it in numbers at NBC. You know, record numbers now for games at you know 7:30 on a Saturday morning. We're getting, you know, 1.5 to 2 million people viewing in because people now want to be part of it. It's like people want an affinity to a club, and once they've got that affinity and that brand loyalty, you know, they'll do whatever they can to support teams. So yeah, the demand for the sport continues to grow. The stars get bigger, the storylines get bigger, and, you know, long may it continue.
Jamie Vardy, Leicester, is an amazing story. Yeah. Let's start with Vardy himself, who, you know, for many people, came out of nowhere. He was ninth tier in England. Now he's an English international. He's got 14 goals. He has scored a record 11 successive matches in the Premier League. Speak to me about him. What makes him a dangerous striker, and why maybe it took so long for him to really hit pay dirt?
Well, the other side of the game that I think is fascinating as well, and this has nothing to do with money. This is a player who 5 years ago, Glenn, was playing in the fifth tier, so like the conference level of football. So it's almost like non-league. 5 years later, he scored 14 goals to lead the lead, scored in 11 straight games. He's the hottest striker in the business. And really, he's had this sort of opportunity where he's continued to work hard. He plays with this enthusiasm, this never-say-die attitude. He chases down defenders. Most of his goals come off his running ability to run in behind back fours, as his 11th goal in 11 successive games came against Manchester United. And when he gets there, Glenn, he's a finisher. And I've always been one of those, I believe. I played in the lower leagues before I managed to make it into the Premier League. And I said, if teams spend time and go down and look lower down the tiers, there is players who I think could make the step up. Yes, they need a little bit of luck. You need a bit of fortune on your way. But if you're a goal scorer, Glenn, it's in you. You know, and if you know what to do in front of goal from 18 yards, whether you're playing on a Sunday morning with your mates or you're playing in the Premier League, not too much changes, the pressure, the noise, the expectation, but he's one goal, one goalkeeper, and Jamie Vardy has taken what he was doing in the fifth tier of football, brought it into the Premier League, and I think it's a really refreshing story and great for all the sort of journeymen playing who are playing, hoping to be given a chance, because Jamie Vardy has got people thinking.
Yeah, what an example of possibility, and you mentioned it was only, if it was 5 years ago, he was in the fifth tier of English soccer. Yeah. He was 25 years of age. Many a guy would have quit the game probably at that point.
Correct.
In some ways,
he was working in a factory, I believe, Glenn. And you know, I mean, the stories are all coming out now, but it's been on record that he was saying, even at 24, 25, one day I'm going to make the Premier League and play for England. And as ever, his mates probably thought he'd had a beer too many, as we all do at certain times. And you know, he was talking out of his hat. But, you know, congratulations to the guy and to Leicester City, really. I think they've been a great story. And I think it was important for them. Everyone said, well, they've had the easy games and they've got six tough games coming up now, the first of which was Manchester United at the weekend. Well, they got a draw. They're still above Manchester United. They're still in the top four. And I know Swansea's to come and Chelsea to come, but, you know, Chelsea are a mid-table team these days, no longer the powerhouses they were. So who knows how far Leicester can go? And they will probably at some point drop out the top four because they haven't got enough quality. But the longer the story goes, I think the better it is for football, and the more that other teams will feel, you know what, if we invest wisely, if we get the right kind of players, then we can get to that, you know, near the top of the table as well.
Yeah, I think these are defining moments, because even in Major League Soccer, that's happened this year with the two lowest budgeted teams in the league ending up the number one and two seed in the league, New York winning the Supporter Shield. And that was the New York Red Bulls and FC Dallas, who did it through a policy of use. So I guess it's a great statement, what Leicester and Vardy are doing. Can they keep it up? That will be the question. How about Arsenal? I know Arsene Wenger's getting criticized for the injuries to Alexis Sanchez. How do you see that whole situation with Arsene Wenger and playing Sanchez?
Unfortunately, for Arsenal and Arsenal fans, I said the other day, we talk more about the treatment table than the Premier League table with Arsenal. And again, it looks like it might undermine their challenge. In a year, Glenn, when, in all honesty, the inconsistencies in the league mean there's an opportunity for somebody. You know, Manchester City have Manchester City days, what I call them, where they just don't quite get at the races. Chelsea have obviously had a disastrous start to the season. Elsewhere, Manchester United have got some points, but not playing that well, and you still feel that You know, there may be more to come. So there's an opportunity for somebody to take hold of the league this year and push on. And I thought it might be Arsenal's turn this time around. But over the last few weeks, I look at last weekend, Francis Coughlin got injured with a knee injury. It looks like he's going to be out up to 3 months. Now, that he was an important loss, and there isn't too much you can do about that one. I think at the weekend, where the criticism for Wenger comes is that he'd gone on record before the match and said that Alexis Sanchez is carrying a hamstring injury. He's in what we call the red zone, so that danger of susceptibility to picking up another injury. Yet he went and played him, and 60 minutes later, he looks like he's off. We're talking about possibly a month, a crucial month in the season, losing your most productive forward who can play in a number of positions. It's a big loss for Arsenal, and it's a big blow to Arsene Wenger. With Champions League coming up against Olympiacos and some tough games if they want to stay up and around the top of the table.
You know, it's obviously possible he could override what trainers say and go and talk to the player himself and say, can you do it for me? And, you know, most players are going to say yes, aren't they?
They are. But sometimes, Glenn, and I think you know the situation where sometimes a manager has to protect a player as well.
Mm-hmm.
You get those players who will play through anything, and sometimes you've got to hold them back. It was interesting, Jurgen Klopp went the other way with Daniel Sturridge and almost publicly poked him and said, sometimes you've got to get out and play. Daniel Sturridge is probably one of those players who has to feel 100%, has to feel great in himself before he'll pull on the shirt. So you do get different characters in the dressing room, and it's important the manager knows which ones sometimes you have to protect and sometimes which ones you have to try and poke and get them out there on the football field.
Yeah, I think the same challenge occurs with Luis Enrique and Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi as well. So that's part one with Robbie Earle. Stay with us. The Best in Soccer Talk continues part two with Robbie Earle.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to the show. Part two of the Robbie Earle interview right now. Manchester United, I look at this team. Yes, they're grinding out results. They're getting results. Yeah. One thing that jumps out to me is just their overall team speed as a team.
Yeah.
They seem pretty methodical and probably lacking maybe a couple more players of pace.
Yeah, I think pace becomes a big thing, Glenn. Dribbling skills is also another. So, you know, the Manchester United teams I played against, grew up watching, had three or four players in that team who one-on-one could run past the opposition, could eliminate defenders off a dribble or a quick move and get chances to score goals. The moment Manchester United don't have those players, now goals come through their build-up of passing and movement. But because the game is being played so slowly, the build-up is quite methodical, it means that teams get a chance to filter back and block things off and block off holes. So it's almost like Manchester United are having all this possession, but they're not really turning that possession into lots of chances. There wasn't a sustained spell against Leicester at the weekend where they were creating three, four chances, you know, having shots past the post, making the goalkeeper work really hard. Now, some are saying, well, that's not Van Gaal's way, and I get that. And some are saying, well, Manchester United may be a different Manchester United. I understand some of that. But when we talk about clubs and we talk about the brand and what they stand for and why you support them, teams support Manchester City for the excitement, for the dash, for the risk, for the speed. And, you know, sometimes you might lose a game 3-2 for being a little bit attack-minded. But I think fans will put up with that. I think where the criticism starts to come for Louis van Gaal is that it looks so slow, it looks so laborious, that this isn't what Manchester United fans signed up for when they, you know, go to Old Trafford and watch a game. And the boos last week against PSV, I thought were quite telling. For me, it took another level. It was almost like the tipping point for some people. I think they want more. And it'll be interesting to see over the next few weeks whether Louis van Gaal allows players a little bit more license to be a bit more attacking.
So you're telling me that Manchester United fans, it's not just about winning. Of course, it is about winning. But it's also about style, purpose of play, entertainment.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when I look at them each and every week trying to score goals in front of defenses, it's difficult.
And there's an elephant in the room as well, going after, say, Wayne Rooney. I know he's England captain. He's captain of Manchester United, and he's been a fantastic player. But right now, If we're looking at current form, if we're looking at what he's offering to the football team, at the moment I would say he's not in the best 11 players of Manchester United. And I don't say that lightly, and I'm a big Wayne Rooney fan in terms of what he's done, the goals he's scored. But at the moment, his confidence looks low, his touch looks off, and I'm not quite sure what he's giving to the team at the moment. So that's something as well that Louis van Gaal is going to have to work and try and push the right buttons and get Wayne Rooney back firing again from either a deep line midfield role or as the main striker.
Robert, do you think he's lost a step? I mean, is it the arc of a football player we're looking at now?
I think with Rooney in particular, I think one of the things with Wayne Rooney is he started, you know, he was playing at the very top at 16 years of age, and I've always said it's a little bit like miles on the clock for a car. I think there's only so many miles within a footballer. I just don't know if he's coming to that point where he maybe he'll have to change his game. I think it's important for Wayne to look at the things he's got in his life. Is he eating well? Is he sleeping well? Is he doing the best things he can? Does he maybe need to take up the yoga and the Pilates and maybe cut out the drinking for the next 2, 3, 4 years to dedicate himself for the rest of his career? Because it would be a shame for such a great player, and he has been a great player, Glenn, that his career tails off and we don't see the end of one of the last sort of real Premier League sort of superstars, really, in terms of, you know, had his whole career playing it in one league.
He's Robbie Earl, NBC analyst, former Premier League player, also was a color analyst for the Portland Timbers. So let's talk a little bit about the Portland Timbers, because you saw him in the early days in the building of a franchise, a local owner in Merritt Paulson, and going through John Spencer as a coach to now Caleb Porter. This whole story right now, and obviously we know the furor that is and the support of fans in Portland is just remarkable. I mean, it's a remarkable thing. But how about through your eyes, where you've seen it come now to them being in an MLS Cup final?
I've seen this team come into MLS, and I think one of the problems in some respects that Portland Timbers had is that they were more known or renowned for the fan base and the Timbers army than they were what they were doing on the football pitch. And I think over the last 18 months that's changed. I think it was something I know Caleb Porter was keen to put a team on the pitch that did justice to that and also had people talking about the football as well as the crowd. It's a fantastic organisation, I have to say. I worked for them for 2 years. And I'm not just talking about the fans or what you see on the pitch, but behind the scenes and the people who work in the offices and the staff are all football people, diehard football people who want to do the best for this club and in the area. And I think up until this point, there's been a little bit of disappointment with what they've done in terms of getting to playoffs and beyond. But I think this is the first time that the group's come together. Matt Paulson's backed Caleb Porter when he's needed to in bringing in the right kind of players. They're a young team. They're a mobile team. They've got hot at just the right time. And I know they're away from home, but for me, would still start as favourites, and there'll be a sizable number of people from Portland, believe you me, who will be making that journey to the MLS Cup final at the weekend. But no, I think it was important for the organisation to get to a final, you know, and obviously they'll be doing everything they can to win. But I think it was important for the organisation to get to a final to show that they're more than just, you know, 24,000 people selling out the stadium every weekend, and they weren't giving a good enough product on the pitch. I think now we're seeing a team who are doing justice on the field and are supported in the manner that we all know.
He's Robbie Earl, NBC analyst. Last question before I let you go, Robbie, and I should have asked it a little bit earlier in this interview, but where did your big break come? You know, everybody has that one moment, maybe that platforms you in a professional soccer career. Where did it come for Robbie Earl?
It's really interesting, Glenn. I had sort of 6 years sort of in what I call the formative years, lower down in the English tier. And I was playing in the old second division, which is the Championship now. And there was a couple of clubs watching me. One was Wimbledon. And it was funny that we were playing away at Middlesbrough. It was wet. It was cold. There was about 5,000 people there. It wasn't a particularly good occasion. And we were down 4-0 with about 5 minutes on the clock. And it was one of those situations where a ball got played from back to front on my team. And I just as I am, a bit crazy, a bit stubborn, chased it as much as I could, put a defender under pressure, got a break, scored a goal, made it 4-1. And it was the day the owner of Wimbledon said to me that he came to the club and asked to sign me. And it was basically, and it was really interesting that he said, if somebody with 5 minutes to go, away at Middlesbrough, no fans in the place, is still prepared to run and chase and go and make something happen, he said, I want a little bit of that in my team. And it's interesting that I see Jamie Vardy and I see that kind of thing in Jamie Vardy and a number of the Leicester fans. Listen, when it comes to you late, Glenn, it means that little bit more. You're prepared to work that little bit harder and you're really hungry for the success. And it, as great as it was playing down the leagues, once you get to the top, you don't really want to leave there. So that was my kind of lucky break. Fortunately, I made the most of it and managed to have a career in the Premier League. But as I know, there's plenty of guys down there as well who, you know, are chasing balls and hoping they get their lucky break. And that's why Jamie Vardy sort of stands for those guys. And hopefully I was one of those as well.
Robbie, listen, thank you very much for coming on and sharing all this insight. We really enjoyed it. And continue
it pleasure, Mike.
Success with you on NBC, where each and every week you're doing a wonderful job. Say hello to that guy, Robbie Musto, and that other guy. You know that other guy who used to play for the Columbus Crew.
That's right, that Cal Martino guy.
That Martino guy, yeah. Say hello to those guys for me. And listen, thanks again for coming on the program.
Well, dude. Cheers, Glenn.
That's a way to wrap it up tonight. I'll tell you what, Robbie Earle there with some great commentary on a number of different things there. I love the piece there where he talks about how he got his big break, and everybody needs one. I think sometimes you look back in the history of players and managers and you see where they started and where they gained experience. It is pretty remarkable. That'll do it tonight. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters, and, of course, HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets. Good night, everyone.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month, no commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.